All right, before you listen to this episode, I want to start by giving you a little bit of my history with my guest today and a quick public service announcement. So I first heard Nate Bagley on my friend Rachel Nielsen's 3 and 30 podcast. If you are a parent, especially a mother, and you are not listening to 3 and 30, you need to start right now. I was running one day and listening to my favorite podcast episodes, and I heard Nate Bagley on Rachel's podcast, and I was putting together the Epic Marriage Summit, and I thought, I need him to be part of this summit. So I reached out to him. He was in the middle of putting together this massive event where he got to interview John and Julie Gottman. I went down to Utah for that. It was amazing. Convinced him to do the marriage summit. And then soon after, he had an event up here where I live in Boise, and he came and stayed with our family. We got to know him, and he's become kind of like my little brother. So he looks up to me because I'm older and wiser and a little farther along in life. So he gives me a hard time, kind of like a younger brother would. And I, of course, have so much respect for him and all he has learned and accomplished in his life. You have to know that Nate Bagley has interviewed some of the biggest and most recognized names in marriage research, like the godparents of marriage, John and Julie Gottman. He's talked to Sue Johnson, who basically developed emotionally focused therapy, which is a huge and widely used therapy, as well as Gary Chapman, who developed the five love languages. I mean, really, Nate has accomplished so much, and he knows what he's talking about. And I love this interview with him where we are both on our A games, but you will see a little bit of that brother-sister relationship that we've kind of formed in the interview. But don't let that take away from the amazing nuggets of wisdom that Nate throws down in this episode about communicating, friendship, and having difficult discussions with your spouse. So without further ado, I will let you listen to our interview. Hello, and welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and today my guest is making fun of me, but he's allowed because he's a good friend now, and he is an expert in the area of marriage. I was grateful to meet him and convince him to be part of our marriage summit, and since he's become a friend, and I'm super excited that he agreed to come on the podcast today to talk about his specialty, which is communication, please help me welcome my friend, Nate Bagley. He's totally making fun of me right now. So
no, I'm not making fun of you. That was a great intro, though. Thank you. I'm so happy to be on your podcast.
Oh, good.
And awesome. You know what? I'm even more happy to be considered a friend of yours.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I know all about you, but let's start by telling the audience a little bit about yourself and your family.
Okay. My name's Nate. I grew up in Salt Lake City. I am married to an amazing woman named Angelin. She is one of the most compassionate and kind and thoughtful and just sweet people you will ever meet. And she's hilarious.
And how in the heck did she fall for you?
I don't know what I did. Honestly, I'll be generous with myself and say, like, in the looks department, I'm a solid like 7, 7.5. She's a straight 10 on a bad day, like a 9.5. And she had her pick of whoever she wanted, and for some reason she picked me, and I feel really, really grateful that she did. Actually, can I tell you a story, something that happened this week?
You bet.
We went for a walk. There's a park near our house that has this lake, and we decided the fall weather has been really nice this week. It's been like 60 degrees here in Salt Lake. So we went to go take a nice little walk around the lake and watch the sunset. And we got halfway around the lake, and my wife just stops and she looks at me and she goes, I just got to tell you, every single day that we're married, I love you more and more. And I didn't know marriage could be this good. And I just feel so lucky to be married to you. And I was just like, what? You're so cool. Like, it just, aww. It's little moments of light like that that make me just so grateful to be married to a woman who sees that a very imperfect guy like me, who is not naturally gifted at relationships, is trying his best and she gives me credit. It means a lot.
Oh, I love that. And I love her. Okay. So now you guys haven't been married for that long in the grand scheme of things, nope. But you have been in the marriage space for a really long time. So tell us how you got interested in marriage even before you were married.
Hey, thanks for setting me up to tell my story. When I was raised in a family where growing up and getting married was kind of the expectation. And really early on in my life, I noticed that there are some couples where, like, I'd go to my friend's house and their parents just looked like they were having a fun time being married. They'd laugh together, they'd joke around with each other, they were going on dates, they were flirting with each other. And then I go to other people's houses and I would like feel tension in the air, and their parents would argue in front of us, and it just like kind of gave me the sick pit in my stomach. And I knew that when I grew up one day I was going to get married, and I knew that if I got married I wanted to have the type of relationship that was more like the fun, playful, flirty kind. And when I got into my mid-20s and all my friends started to get married, and even some of my younger siblings started to get married, I started to wonder, like, why isn't this working out for me? And I realized that my relationships had two things in common. One is that every single one failed, and the other one is that I was a part of it. So I figured it was high time I figure out what I needed to learn so that I could have that type of a relationship. So I was this single 28 year old guy, and I decided to quit my job and spend the better part of a year traveling around the country interviewing couples who had amazing relationships. And my goal was to figure out what they did that was different than what everybody else was doing that made their relationship so great. And that's kind of how I got my start. Is I became this anti-expert, this guy who just was on this quest to figure out what made truly extraordinary love possible. And then after doing a lot of those interviews, the opportunity started to open up for me to talk to therapists and researchers and authors and other experts in the space. I got to sit down and talk to Gary Chapman, who wrote The 5 Love Languages. I've interviewed John and Julie Gottman on several occasions. They're like the godfathers of marriage research. And I found myself finding answers on behalf of people who were listening to these interviews on my podcast. So that's kind of how it all started. I became this kind of weird marriage anti-expert before I was even married.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about these interviews for a second, because you have interviewed some of the greats, and I can't figure out how you're doing this, but getting like the most recognized names in marriage research to sit down and chat with you and tell you all of their tricks. But what are some of the most important things you've learned from them over the years? And you can be specific or general, but what's had the greatest impact in your own life and in your own marriage from all of your conversations with these marriage Right.
That's a great question. I think one of the things that's most important to realize is that I don't like the word work, but your marriage requires effort, constant effort. And that it's just like if you want to be really good at baking or really good at a specific sport or really good at a musical instrument, you can't just learn it and then walk away from it. It requires constant maintenance in order for you to be in peak form. And so what I've learned from the majority of these experts and these amazing couples is that they all have a tendency to have kind of a growth mindset. They're constantly looking for ways that they can improve and be better, and they don't settle for mediocrity. And I feel like it's important to clarify, especially in the relationship space, when you hear somebody say don't settle, often what they're saying is like, you're so great, don't settle for somebody who's less great than you. But in this case, it's more like, hey, what am I capable of? And am I settling for less than what I am capable of? Or am I settling for, could I be a better husband or could I be a better wife? And in what ways could I be better? And am I settling in my life right now for who I could be? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. No, I love that analogy. It's almost like it's kind of you're relating marriage to sports almost. Like, if you don't practice, you stop developing, and then
absolutely,
you're not the best athlete you could possibly be.
There is so much overlap between marriage and business, or marriage and sports, or like I had a friend reach out to me today, and he was telling me all the parallels between marriage and poetry. And I was like, wow, it's so interesting. But if there's anything you're passionate about, you can probably relate it to marriage. And I think sports is one of the best analogies you can dream
of.
Definitely
one that I understand. I love it. So over time, you've kind of become like the communication in marriage guy.
Yeah.
Can you talk, I've heard your analogy and maybe others have too, but can you talk about the analogy you make about how communication in marriage is kind of like doing the dishes?
Absolutely. So I became the communication guy, not by choice. it's because every person I talk to, if they're struggling in their relationship, I'd say 9 times out of 10, they say they're struggling with communication. And most most people actually aren't struggling with communication. What people are struggling with is having difficult conversations. And I think one of the biggest contributors to people having a hard time having difficult conversations is because they don't do the dishes every day. So here's the analogy. If you have dinner and right when you're done eating, you go over to the sink and you rinse off the dishes and you put them in the dishwasher, the dishes take like 2 minutes, maybe five if you had a very cooking intensive dinner. But it's not that hard if you just rinse stuff off right when you use it and put it in the dishwasher.
Yeah.
But if you're like me, which I do this a lot, you just go, I'll take care of it later. And then the next day rolls around and the dishes pile up and the dishes pile up and the dishes pile up. And then you go to get a drink of water and you realize there's no clean cups and you have to do the dishes if you're going to have like something to eat on that night. And then you turn to this giant pile of dishes and it feels daunting and overwhelming. And you realize that the stuff at the very bottom has had like 4 days or 5 days to get all crusty and hard. And you have to like pull out the sandblaster, the pressure washer to get all the gunk off just so the dishwasher will clean them. And it ends up taking like 3 hours instead of the 5 minutes that it would have otherwise taken you. That is a perfect analogy for how some people deal with communication. So research shows that the happiest and most fulfilled couples actually have what's called a low negativity threshold. And what that means is that they don't let negativity build up in the relationship. If something happens and somebody's feelings get hurt or somebody uses a tone that is a little harsh or just something bad happens that causes tension between the two partners, the happiest couples clean it up immediately, just like that dish that you just finished eating off of. They take care of the problem and then it doesn't have time to pile up. The most miserable people, the most miserable couples, they tend to let the little things go. They pick their battles. They let little stuff go, just roll off their back, you know, which we hear that advice a lot. Pick your battles, let the little things go. But that's actually really terrible advice, that the most miserable couples let those little things pile up and pile up and pile up until one day the straw that breaks the camel's back comes in and it's like that one last cup that you put on top of the dishes and it's like, I had it, I can't deal with this anymore. And they have these explosive emotional arguments that it's even over something that might be really small, but the emotion has built up over days or weeks or even months. And it just causes this huge mess in the relationship. And so I encourage couples to learn, and it's a skill, to learn to clean up their messes really, really quickly. My wife and I now, when something goes bad, the things that used to take us days to work through now take us literally minutes or even sometimes seconds. It's just like a couple of keywords that we've figured out. And, you know, my wife will say, hey, could you try that again? And I'll be like, oh, I used a tone of voice that was not very nice. So I'll say the thing again. And she goes, thank you. And I go, no problem. And then it's like, no crisis, no drama. So yeah, that's kind of the dishes analogy. Is it's important to not let your dishes build up over time, or it turns into a daunting task, and it can actually cause a massive emotional separation and distance between you and your partner over time.
Yeah, it's true. I love that analogy so much.
Thanks. Okay,
so you talk about this framework that I want to spend the rest of our time talking about.
Yeah,
and that is, I know you, I like you, and I've got your back. So you talked about this in the summit. I love it. I've gotten so many great feedbacks. I've gotten so much great feedback.
That'll be the plural of feedbacks.
Okay. Anyways, lots of people really, really love that framework that you kind of put together. So what are some great ways to get to know your spouse and show them that you're interested in knowing them?
Great question. So the premise behind this, I know you, I like you, I have your back thing, is this is another conflict issue. A lot of people struggle with conflict in their marriage, not because they aren't good communicators, but because they have stopped investing in their friendship. And in my opinion, the very core of your friendship, there's like three foundational pillars to a really solid friendship. It's, I know you, I'm interested in your life, I'm interested in what you've got going on in your head and in your heart, I'm interested in the people who are important to you and what's stressing you out, what you're proud of. I like you, which is I actually enjoy spending time with you. And then I have your back, which is I trust you and you trust me. We have this mutual relationship where we can depend on each other. And if you think of any friendship that you have, especially outside your family, all three of those components are there. I know you, I like you, I've got your back. And as soon as one of those things starts to weaken, we stop confiding in each other. If you don't know somebody, but you really like them and you have their back, but you don't know what's going on in their life. It's like that old high school friend that you used to be really close to, and now you think you find yourselves just like pulled apart because of life circumstances. And you might still really love them a lot, but you can't really be friends anymore because you don't even talk. You don't know what's going on in each other's lives. If you have a lack of "I like you," I think the best example of the lack of "I like you" is Buzz Lightyear and Woody in Toy Story, the first one. They know each other and they have to have each other's back because they have a common goal, but man, they hate each other. This is what I would refer to as a marriage of mutual toleration. They know who each other is and they're united in like raising their kids together, but they don't kiss anymore. They don't want to go on dates with each other. They tolerate each other's existence, and it just does, it's not fun to be around each other.
Right.
They're not like looking forward to date night. And then the "I have your back" situation, like if the trust is missing and your partner's constantly breaking their promises or you're breaking your promises to your partner, how can you expect them to openly communicate with you? And so when one of those things is missing, it makes conflict really, really difficult to navigate because you're constantly wondering, is that person going to be there for me? I don't really like this person, so I don't really want to open up and share things with them. Or I don't know them, so I don't know what their reaction is going to be or what they have going on in their life. And it makes conflict really hard. So I think that if you're having conflict in your marriage, the place to start is with those three pillars. I know you, I like you, and I have your back. So you asked, what are some things? Sorry, I just like.
No, that's perfect. I should have asked you to explain it first. Now that we've got a good foundation,
yeah,
how we can build that I know you pillar.
Yeah. So the I know you pillar, the best way to build that is to ask your partner open-ended questions. Ask your partner questions that are not yes or no questions. When your partner comes home or you come home at the end of the day, what's the first question you typically ask?
How was your day?
How was your day? Yeah. Fine. Good. It's all right. You know, how often do we answer with these one word?
Right.
Like if you really want to know your partner, ask them something that requires them to form a thought. Like, hey, what was the most stressful thing that went on at work today? Or hey, tell me about a victory that you had. Did you have any like little or big wins while I was gone, while we were apart? There's a really great app in the app store that's called the Gottman Card Decks, and they have hundreds and hundreds of open-ended questions that you can just scroll through on your phone. But it's any question that will give you insight into what's going on in your partner's life. It could be anything from, tell me who's most important to you in your life right now that's not related to you, to what's something you've always dreamed of doing but you haven't done because you think it's like selfish or unreasonable. You could ask them, what's the thing that's most stressful in their life right now? You could ask them, what's something that I could follow up with you on later in a day? You know, sometimes we don't even know what's going on in our partner's day, and they might have a big meeting or they might have like a stressful doctor's appointment that's coming up. And if we don't know, we can't follow up with them and be like, hey, how did that thing go?
Yeah.
We miss the opportunity to be involved in our partner's life.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is the key to I know you is asking really good questions.
Yep.
Answers. Yeah, yep. I like that. What are the best ways to show your spouse that you like?
Oof, I love this one. To me, there's two important parts of I like you. It's how you treat your partner. It's treating your partner like you like them, but it's also how you perceive your partner. My favorite activity to do is to give very specific and very sincere compliments based on a positive attribute that you know your partner possesses. So something that I would say to my wife, honey, I love how compassionate you are. I noticed this week when you were playing with your niece and nephew, when your niece fell down and she got hurt, you were the first one to be there by her side and make sure she was okay. And that just, I love how compassionate you are. You are such a sweet and kind person. A very specific instance of a quality that exemplifies her character. Not only does that make her feel like $1 million because she's being caught doing something good, but it also, and this is even more important, it also makes me see my wife through rose-colored glasses. Mm-hmm. It makes me think of her in fond ways if I'm looking to catch her doing good things.
Right.
And I think it's really tempting in life to catch our partner doing the bad things and try and correct them. I think it's easy to criticize them for their shortcomings, to be upset with them for the ways in which they let us down, and it takes extra effort to catch them doing the good things sometimes.
Well, it's all about what you look for, right? You're going
to have
evidence for what you're looking for. So if you're looking for all the ways you like them, that's what's going to stand out to you.
Perfect summary. So yeah, doing that is a great way to make your partner like you more because you're noticing things that they want to be noticed. And then also it helps you put on those rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're a words of affirmation girl like yours truly, man, I feel like I'm always asking my husband, like, what did you like about me today or this week? Or tell me all the ways that you love me. Not because I don't think that he does. It's just because I love to hear it.
Oh, I love that you do that. I some people are like, I shouldn't have to ask. Like, no. I shouldn't have to ask for what I want my partner. It's so much more romantic if my partner just gives it to me.
No.
My thought is the most generous gift you can give your partner is setting them up to be successful. So I'm a words of affirmation person too. And I'm constantly, okay, so I have some friends, Josh and Casey. And one of the things they do is, this is brilliant. They will like do a chore. Say they clean the kitchen. If Casey cleans the kitchen, she'll go, Josh, come ooh and ah for me.
Yes.
And he'll walk into the kitchen and be like, ooh, the kitchen is so clean. Ah, you even did the dishes. And it's like this playful script that they have to give each other acknowledgement and praise for the ways that they're contributing to the marriage. And it's like, there's no shame in doing that at all.
No, I love that. I love that so much. Okay, so now how can we be sure that our spouse knows that we have their back?
Yep, this is an important one because there are a lot of people out there who are struggling because their partner has broken promises over and over and over again. They're hurting. They feel a sense of betrayal and they wonder like, can I ever trust my partner again? And if you're in a situation like that or just in a situation where you're like, I don't think I can leave my husband at home with my kids for more than an hour, you know, or the house is going to get torn apart and somebody might die. Or I don't think I can give my wife a credit card where she's going to just like overspend on the budget and we're going to find ourselves in debt and all the work that I've done is going to just be for nothing. You know, there's these trust issues that we have. I'm not going to let my wife go hang out with her girlfriends because I don't know if she's going to go out and get herself into trouble and then who knows what'll happen. You know, we hear all these horror stories and then we live in such a way that doesn't allow us to accept our partner for exactly who they are. And so I think if you're in a position where you need to gain your partner's trust, the best thing you can do is start to make and keep promises on the regular. Promises that you know you can keep.
What about like having your back? Like my sister-in-law keeps talking trash about me. Like, do you have my back? Like those types of.
Yes. So that's another great thing. So making sure that you put your partner first. I love the Gottmans talk a lot about having an us versus the world mentality.
Yeah.
How you should always take your partner's side first, even if you don't agree with them, just because you should be making decisions for two. You have to realize that like when you're married, if you want to have an amazing marriage, you have to take into consideration how your choices are going to affect your partner in every aspect, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, socially. You know, there's moments where I, as the social butterfly, I need to be like, you know what, guys, can't come to the party tonight. Wife's an introvert. She spent the last 13 hours working in a hospital, taking care of people. She's not going to have gas and she's probably going to want some recharge time with me. So I need to pass on the thing that I want because I'm making decisions for two. If I was making it for myself, I'd be out there. If my mom says something critical, which she never would because she's so sweet, but if she ever did say something critical of my wife, I would step in and be like, not okay with me.
Yeah.
So that's important as well, I think. Just take into consideration, are you making decisions for two? Do you have a you versus the world mentality? Are you making and keeping your promises? And are you allowing your partner a little bit of room to be imperfect?
Giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and also I feel like, so I was talking to my really good friend, Laura Heck, who's a marriage and family therapist. And she says, we talk a lot about how 69% of conflict in marriage is unresolvable conflict. Meaning it's the type of conflict, you have the same conflict over and over and over again in different ways. And it typically comes from the fact that you're two very different people that have been raised in two very different families. And if I'm a neat freak and my wife is cluttery, or if I'm always on time and she's always late, or if I'm an early bird and she's a night owl, those are fundamental differences that are always just going to cause a little bit of tension in our relationship. And there's so many people who come into her office and they'll say, look, Laura, I would love to have a better marriage. And the thing that needs to happen is my husband or my wife needs to change this, this, and this. And they're all innate qualities that are really not changeable. Like, I can't just tell my wife, I can't. Our marriage would be better if you were just an early riser and you need to either figure that out or we're not going to have a happy marriage. Because she's just not. She's a night owl. It's not something you can change. So what she says she hears when people come into her office and say something like that is, I would really love my partner if they were someone different.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Our partner would be amazing, or our marriage would be amazing if my partner was not who they were.
Yeah.
And I think part of trust is allowing your partner to do things differently than the way you would do them, to live a little bit differently than you would live, and to just allow your partner a little bit of grace to make some mistakes and not be the ideal version of what you perceive to be a partner.
Yeah.
And accept your partner for who they are. And when they feel accepted, they'll actually show up and press you quite a bit, I think. think.
Yeah. I like to say knock it off. Like, your spouse's only job is to be them.
Yeah.
Your job is to figure out how to love them exactly the way they are. Stop trying to change them. Knock it off.
And you're so good at it. No, you are. I got to spend a couple of days with you and your family up in Boise, or as the people from Boise call it, Boise.
No.
Yeah, it happens. I hear it all the time. But I got to spend time in your home, and I just saw how, not only how welcoming your family was to me, this like weird guy just staying at your house, but how you gave permission to every single person in your family to be exactly who they are. And each one of your kids and your husband has different strengths and different weaknesses. And you are so good at just like embracing them for exactly the phase of life that they're in, personality that they have, cultivating the unique talents that they each have. And like, it was really cool to see.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that compliment. But I was also thinking when you were talking about that, the have your back part, the creating that us against the world mentality, also applies to your children, like us against the kids, because you run into a lot of problems when you start siding with the children against your spouse. That's
definitely
a big time no-no.
Definitely. Your kids are part of that world that you are sometimes against.
Totally. And I'm even like, I even tell my kids, I'm like, hey, listen, if you guys want to talk about how crappy your parents are, like if you guys want to be upstairs and band together and talk about how your parents are so mean and they're ruining your life, hey, that is totally fine with me. Like, I'm glad you have someone to commiserate with, because we stand united. And so you guys can all talk about it. Nothing's going to change, but you know.
You're welcome to go find new parents if you want.
Exactly.
I think they can do a better job.
Exactly. I also told my kids this week that you have the coolest stinking mom on the planet. But do not betray my trust. Then you're in big trouble. But
yeah. If
you are honest with me, dang, I'm really cool. I promise you that.
But.
Yeah. Okay. So I love this. So going from studying and teaching about marriage to actually being married, what has been the most fun thing about implementing all of this research and all of these things that you're learning with your beautiful wife?
The most fun thing is seeing that when you do the work. So I'm going to preface this because I preface everything. Knowing what to do and actually doing it are two very different things. Mm-hmm. And I am inherently an insight chaser. I love reading a really good book or listening to an amazing podcast. I love taking a workshop or going through a training and learning something new. It's like super stimulating. It gets my brain cooking. I get the rush of the endorphins and the positive chemicals, the oxytocin, and it feels really good. But it doesn't change my life unless I am an action taker. So you have to transition from insight chaser to action taker. And the coolest thing about marriage for me has been taking all of this years of knowledge that I've been gathering, doing these interviews and workshops and trainings and reading books and stuff like that, and putting it into practice and seeing how it actually works inside this specific relationship, this unique microcosm, this environment that my wife and I create together. Like, I did an experiment in the first year of marriage where every single day of the week I did something like I just tried to figure out, okay, what's my wife's love language? So I like made dinner for her and I bought her flowers and I cleaned the house. And then whenever she comes home from work as a nurse, when she'd come home, I'd do the golden retriever thing and I'd be super excited to see her. I'd run and greet her at the door. And then I would pin her up against the wall and give her this like long 10-second kiss. And at the end of the week, I was like, hey, what did you notice this week? What did I do well? And she's like, oh my gosh, that kiss. Oh, it was so, I can't, having that passionate kiss every single day was so amazing. I don't know where that came from, but I loved it. And I was like, did you notice the flowers I got you? And she's like, you got me flowers? I was like, yeah, they've been on the table for like 3 days. And she's like, no, they haven't. And we ran into the kitchen and she's like, Nate, I'm so sorry. I totally missed them for 3 days. Thank you so much for getting me these flowers. But I realized my wife doesn't care that much about flowers. What she cares about is being wanted and cuddled and kissed and held. And that makes her feel amazing. And so inside my marriage, I got to run this experiment and realize, like, I'm a student of my partner. I'm a student of my wife. And I can figure out what are the things that cheer her up when she's sad? What are the things that make her really happy? What are the things that motivate her to be an amazing wife? It's so exciting to see how I can change how I show up to influence how she shows up. And then together we can create this amazing, fun relationship that creates the type of connection that I talked about at the beginning of this podcast, where we're going for a walk around the lake and my wife goes, every single day, I'm more in love with you.
That's totally what I was thinking when you said that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so much fun when you get into that dynamic.
Okay. So. I love that so much. And I'm going to issue a challenge to all of my listeners, whether you have been married for 3 days or you've been married for 30 years. I think you should do 1 week of just intensive experimentation on what your spouse's love language is and see what they notice.
Yes. Without asking them.
Yes.
Just do things and be like, let's see how they respond. I'm going to make the bed for them today and I'm going to like make them breakfast in bed. Let's see if they really like acts of service.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And then at the end of the week, figure out what was the most impactful. And then I want you to email me.
Yeah. And email me too, would you?
Yes.
Nate@growthmarriage.com. I want to hear about it.
Awesome. I love this so much. Okay. Last question. Most important. You had the undivided attention of all the married couples in all the world. What is the most important thing you could teach them about communication in marriage?
About communication in marriage.
Or having difficult conversations. I know that's your thing.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think starting with, I know you, I like you, and I have your back is going to be the biggest thing. If you can establish that friendship and make sure that you cultivate it in an ongoing manner, you're going to notice that like 80% of your conflicts just disappear because you're going to be giving your partner the benefit of the doubt. You're going to be trusting them more. You're going to have confidence in that relationship and the fact that it's so funny the way that we get married and we're like, you marry the person that you love more than anybody in the world and you trust more than anybody else in the world. And then a month into marriage, you get this fear of, can I trust them? Are they going to be there for me? Maybe did they have malicious intentions when they said that thing? They use that tone of voice. Are they out to get me? And it's like all of our love gets turned into fear. And so by focusing on, I know you, I love you, and I have your back, you're getting rid of some of that fear and dread that your partner's not going to be there for you and reinvesting it into creating that love. That would be the first thing I would say. And then the second thing I would say is that if you are caught in a conflict heavy relationship and you're feeling frustrated and stuck, you're just arguing nonstop, or even worse in some cases, you try and have a hard conversation and your partner just shuts you out. That's another form of arguing and you just feel so lonely in your relationship. The next piece of advice I would have is that you have the power to change your relationship even if your partner doesn't want to participate in that change. And the great thing about marriage is that there's two people involved and it takes two people to create a certain system. And if the system that you have created isn't working just by changing your inputs, it changes the dynamic of the system and your partner is forced to show up differently. And so I would invite you to invest in learning what you can do differently to put your partner in a position where they have to show up differently to engage with you. And then by changing those inputs, you can get different results. So don't feel like all is lost if you're feeling stuck or lonely or like you can't get out of this conflict cycle, because you absolutely can. I see it happen all the time.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. And I have to say that that system talk was so psychobabbly, but I love it.
Did it make sense?
It makes perfect sense. But I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
If you find yourself with, you're examining your relationship, you listen to this podcast, you're like, okay, I'm looking at these pillars and I feel like there might be a breakdown or there could definitely be some improvement in one of these pillars. Where do we start? What do you think? Where do I start?
Are you setting me up? I feel like you're setting me up. So I put together a really cool course called Say What You Need to Say.
And I was setting you up.
Say what you need to say. You were setting me up. Thank you. So if you just go to talktoyourspouse.com, the whole first section is about, I know you, I like you, I have your back. And if there's a breakdown, what to do about it. There's specific things that you can do to put a change in it. Not only that, if you want something really cool, go to the Epic Marriage Summit. And I created a 30-day plan that's also in the course, but you can get it there as well. And you can see me kind of talk about some of the stuff I've talked about here and get that 30-day plan. So.
Oh, cool. Okay. So, because that was my next question. Where can people go to find you? Talktoyourspouse.com. Is that where they're going?
Talktoyourspouse.com is a great place to go if you want help with communication. That's the course we put together. If you just want to listen to the podcast and get more really fun, gooey conversations like this, just go to growthmarriage.com and we'll talk to you about how to grow inside your marriage.
Yeah, I love it. I'm going to link to all that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Nate Bagley. This has been awesome.
Thank you.
I talk to you, I'm like, yes, I've got so much more stuff in my tool belt.
The feeling is mutual. I love talking to you and I love what you're doing for the world.
You give the best actionable tools. I honestly feel like after every conversation with you, I've got more tools in my tool belt. So,
well, we should do this more often then.
Let's do it.
We'll do more podcast swaps.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.
I mean, you may have to listen to this episode a couple of times to get all of the value that is jam-packed in here. Nate, like I said, really knows what he's talking about when he talks about laying the foundation of a successful and strong marriage, which you've heard it said before, marry your best friend. And in this episode, we truly talk about what it means to be a good friend to your spouse and how that is created. And if you need further support on this, definitely check out the course he created at talktoyourspouse.com, because that's what he came up to Boise to do, was to create that course. And I can personally attest to the fact that it is going to be life changing. I'm also really excited because as I was editing this interview, I got an idea for the challenge when he was talking about that experiment he did with his wife in the first year of his marriage, where he experimented with the love languages to find out what her love language was and what she responded to. I am going to start a challenge today called the 5 Love Language Challenge. And whether you've been married a few days or lots and lots and lots of years, it doesn't matter. Knowing your spouse's love language will truly transform your marriage. I absolutely guarantee that. And even if you've known it in the past, love languages can change and evolve over time. Different seasons of your life kind of call for different types of showing love to each other. And so no matter where you're at, no matter how well you think you know your spouse, doing this challenge to figure out their love languages could definitely, definitely help you step up your showing love to your spouse game. So make sure you go and sign up with the link in my show notes to the Love Language Challenge and join us for just some really fun ways to experiment and try out different things to really nail down your spouse's love language, especially going into the holidays when it gets stressful and the first thing to go is your relationship with your spouse. So make sure you know their love language, so when your spouse is running around super stressed about everything going on for the holidays, you can be sure to show them love in a way that they for sure understand. I'm so grateful that you guys took the time to listen today. I hope that you are too, that you got something out of this episode. Make sure you join us next week for Dr. Jeff Stewart, who is an expert in building trust in the marriage relationship, especially after a betrayal. His episode is really good. And until next week, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.